once in a lifetime. A man knows a moment, one wonderful moment.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with acclaimed Philadelphia-based jazz vocalist Eddie Bruce. We get into his first full big band album called For Dreamers and Their Dreams and his career in the world of music. Featuring the 17-piece Ed Vizzino Jim Ward Big Band, this project marks a genuine career milestone of capping decades of swing immersion built on years of guest spots with this Jersey Shore ensemble. His relationship with the band leaders Ed and Jim spans decades and is rooted in mutual respect and shared musical sensibilities. Eddie spent decades directing a host of well-choreographed wedding gigs, yet these days he is doing what he wants. This album, along with the gigs and so much more, the choice is his, and he is soaring with them. Enjoy this interview.
Thanks for all you're doing for great music out there.
Yeah, no, I love it, and I'm looking forward to getting into it. So before we get into your latest album and your world of music, you know, 6 years ago, this pandemic reshaped so much for all of us, especially musicians. How did you get through that COVID era, and how has it influenced the way that you create and do things today?
Well, it was a strange time. My main money-making gig in music for my whole career, what I call my day gig, was as the premier wedding band leader of Philadelphia. So weddings, 46 years, Joe, I did the best, most beautiful parties, weddings, bar mitzvahs, the whole part of music that is sort of looked down on, you know, by so many people in the music business. But I had this incredible band, and we worked our butts off. You know, we would play 4-hour weddings with 2 5-minute breaks and give the people everything we could to make this memory for life. And we took it very, very seriously. Yeah. So I was still doing that, you know, in a pandemic, and we were booked solid, and we lost maybe 75 weddings, which was a ton of gigs and money. And, you know, thankfully at that time there was some help. You know, we had all of a sudden, they had unemployment for the gig worker. And for the first time in my entire life, I was able to collect unemployment. But we all, you know, what I did musically to survive, because of course, at the same time, I was doing cabaret and theaters and doing the Great American Songbook to save my soul from having to play what the brides wanted me to play, you know?
Yeah.
And so I started doing a live stream, as many people did, from my living room, front of my piano. I hated to use tracks, but I found a great supplier of really good custom tracks that I could get in any key and certain style. And each week I literally created like a 1 hour and 15 minute live show where I just sat there and sang and told stories and talked to people and made it like I treated it like a talk show, like I was on late night network television. I took it very seriously.
Yeah.
And we had great response, and I saved a lot of them. They were themed. I did a Manilow night, a Beatles night, a Bennett night, a Sinatra night. I did Mathis. We did so many cool things, and it helped a lot of people, including me, really me. But it helped a lot of people get through those lonely, home-ridden days.
Yeah, and we needed it.
Yeah, we did. But I'm proud of it, and I love doing it. I miss it sometimes. I want to go back and do one just for the heck of it. But I saved them all. They're all on my YouTube channel, which is Eddie Bruce Music. You have to type in all three words, or it goes to some other strange place. But they're there. They're fun to watch. You know, they send me back to another time.
So let's get into the new album For Dreamers and Their Dreams. Talk to me about this album. What was the idea? What were you going for?
I was going for my first big band album. First time I recorded with a big band. You know, it's very much a luxury to get to sing with a big band. Financially, you know, very few gigs will support it. A lot of great big bands out here work just for rehearsals, you know, just because they want to play these great charts. And so I had done a lot of work with a big band down here at the Shore area, the Jersey Shore area. And, you know, they had several albums out, and the leader of that band, Ed Vizzino, had written a whole bunch of charts for me over the years. And they basically were sitting in a file, you know, I hadn't gotten to do them very rarely. And I had just performed with the Philly Pops here, and I did a big concert, and that feeling of singing with this big orchestra. So we just said, why don't we dig these up and just let's do an album. Who knows where it'll go or what, but for ourselves, we'll have some fun. So we put together these 14 songs, wrote a few new charts, including one that I have a song I wrote, the only original on the album, called "Philly Is the City," which is my tribute to my hometown and a little poke in the eye to New York, New York. It's a little bit of a parody of that song, but it's kind of fun. And we just went in the studio and we did it in 2 days live. We just boom. And I went back and tweaked some vocals, but pretty much it is what it is. I love singing that way. I like live performance, whatever it is, you got it. And we didn't auto tune or play with anything. We just sort of tweaked a few of the mixes and we have an album. I'm proud of it.
So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
Well, I always hope the listener connects with any performance somewhere in their emotional soul, wherever it takes them. They just want to listen on the way to work and sing along. That's great. If the performance or the lyric reading touches them or sends them off into their world somewhere where it tweaks a memory or a feeling, then I've done my job there. Everybody's going to come to it in a different place. Musicians and singers, I hope, just appreciate the artistry of the musicians. The arrangements, I think, are extraordinary. And, you know, vocal performance-wise, I'm never satisfied with that, you know, but I'm fine. It's good, and I hope people like it. People that aren't musicians, I think, appreciate it on a different level. They just sort of they just like the sound. Yeah. And preserving the big band genre, which is so hard to do these days, I think it's important. There's nothing like the feeling of those trumpets and those trombones and the sax. It's just the harmonies, the phrase, the things they can do with just sort of embracing you, you know, these musical blankets of sound that a singer gets. You don't get it with a trio. And I love working with a great trio and do most of the time. So, yeah, I hope people just hear the arrangements as well as the vocals and just enjoy it.
So take me back to your beginnings. How did this love affair with jazz, singing, this world, this community, how did it begin?
Strangely, I'm a child of the 60s and grew up in Northeast Philly as a young kid in the 60s. And I was my friends were listening to the Stones and the Beatles. I had no interest whatsoever. It took me years to appreciate them later. They were listening to that. I was listening to Sinatra, Bennett, Ella. When I was 6 years old, my mother took me to a nightclub in Philly, six, to see my favorite act in the world at 6 years old, live on stage, the Three Stooges.
Wow.
And there I was, 6 years old for my birthday, going with a live band and Moe and Larry and whatever the latest Curly was by that time. But I was just like, I loved it, you know, and they finished their show and music and laughs. And I got up ready to leave. And there was a timpani roll and an announcer said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the star of our show, Miss Ella Fitzgerald." Yeah, that's what I did. Like, what's an Ella Fitzgerald? I'm six. I had no clue. And the line I use in my show that always gets a great laugh is, you know, she walked out on the stage and opened her mouth. And I knew at 6 years old in that moment what I wanted to be. Wow. A black female jazz singer. But that has worked out for me.
Right.
It completely changed my life at six.
Yeah.
And it's so weird what you expose your kids to. You just never know, like, where it's going to take them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at 11, 12 years old, I knew I could sing a little bit, and I was obsessed with those singers, Joe Williams, Sarah Vaughan, Carmen McRae, Steve Lawrence, who had a gorgeous voice. I just loved listening to them sing. And I went to a little talent show at a local synagogue, and I auditioned and a lady running the show was just a housewife with a couple of kids loving music. And she just put her arms around me and took me home to my mom and said, "I want to manage him." And she just knew nothing except she had a great gift of gab. She took me to every talent show, every place that would let me get on the stage, and said, "You sing anywhere and everywhere we can make you sing." Took lessons. My first headshot was at 11 and a half in a tuxedo with a bolo tie. You know, it was sort of, I was doomed to croon from an early age. And I was on my way, you know, just to do music that I loved. And then after being on the road with the band for years and working all over the country, not unfortunately, not Kansas City, but Portage, Michigan, and Columbus, and Indianapolis, and Boca Raton, and I mean, all over the place, working lounges, singing Billie Holiday in the early, and Sinatra in the early sets, and Doobie Brothers and Allman Brothers in the late sets, you know, but covering everything. And came back to Philly when the band broke up, young and broke and dumb, and wanting to find something to do until I could get back on the road, which what I thought that real music world was, lounges and Holiday Inns. And my friend had a wedding band, and he gave me work. I thought, this is a nightmare. I don't want to do this. The musicians were weekenders. They were doctors and lawyers who just did this as a hobby. And I thought, this is terrible. And then I started to get booked 3 months. You know, weddings were 6 months, a year in advance. Next thing I know, I was booked solid for a year.
Wow.
So he said, why don't you put your own band together and then we can both make money. You know, you'll have your band, and then when you're not working, you'll have to sing with me, and I can book you and make a commission when so that took off. And I thought, I'll do this for a year or two, maybe, you know. And 46 years later, I retired from the wedding business. But about 15 years into it, I realized that I needed musically some more stimulation than what the brides wanted me to play. Cause you don't play for you at a wedding, you play to make them happy. And yeah. We did it with great arrangements, real musicians, rehearsed bands. So it was musically fine, but it wasn't rewarding. And so I started doing cabaret. A friend of mine produced one of the really incredible cabarets of this country at the time in New Hope, Pennsylvania, called Odette's. His name is Bob Egan. And it attracted all the big New York cabaret stars in this little, it was their getaway to, you know, to rural Pennsylvania, to New Hope, an artist community. And they would go and perform, 60 seat room. And I said, give me a shot here. Can I do a show here? And I went up and I did a show, and it was the first time people were looking at me and listening. They weren't eating dinner or dancing or making a toast to their bride. You know, they were listening, and it was a shock. And he said to me afterward, you know, you sing great, but you got to learn how to do this. You had to learn how to touch these people with some reality, some honesty, and not just snap your fingers. You know, I've been doing music by the pound at these weddings. And I went out and I took his advice. I watched every cabaret performer that I could. I had my background in jazz, and I started to learn how to do it. And it became a wonderful sideline to my wedding career. And then when I quit the wedding business, I hit it full time. So now I work, you know, I sing when I want, where I want, and what I want, which is a gift. And so I'll do a theater with my Tony Bennett tribute. You know, I have a show that's dedicated to Tony, and an album, you know, dedicated to Tony. I do that with a trio. I have an Anthony Newley show that I do, a great love of his, the Newley Brickus songbook. I'll do that with a trio. I'll do these shows with a big band. I had the honor to sing with the Philly Pops. So I'm getting some really cool things in my old age here, and I'm having a really good time. I've worked all the fine rooms in New York, although I don't work in New York too much anymore. I'm going to come back in July for a show there at the Cunning Room, but it's hard to get an audience in New York when you live in Philly. You're not there. It's too many, so much going on, so many singers. But I do love working there when I do it. And I'm just enjoying life, man. I'm just singing great songs, and with the best musicians. I have always just been so lucky to work with some of the greatest cats in Philly. And we have a great jazz scene here.
You know, it's interesting. Before we got on, we were talking about Marilyn, and I had never seen that level of acumen on stage. When you're talking about, you know, getting coached on how to get on stage and how to entertain, I remember leaving that show. I saw her in 2018. She was at Johnson County Community College here in town. And I remember I got off and I told my wife, I was like, I've never seen anything like that. That's an old world that is slipping away. In between songs, Ted was playing the piano and she was talking and laughing, and the sequins were all like jingling on her body. And I was just like, my God, this woman is just absolutely entertaining. Because you see a lot of performances, and they're not bad, where they just get up and they gig it and they're gone, you know, and they may say a couple things in between. Her whole goal, which is what cabaret and that world of singing and jazz is really getting to the bottom of your soul and really making you get away and think, man, I want more and more and more. I mean, there's another guy in town, yeah, Lonnie McFadden, that does the same thing. Anyway, I just, when you
know, it is so, you are so right. And it is the hardest thing to teach. because I've coached some singers as well. And Marilyn has a whole, you know, other career as a teacher, a performance teacher, really. And I've taken classes with her, you know, and it's hard to teach. I mean, I've been on a microphone since I'm 11. I have an easy way. It just comes naturally to me. I'm conversational. I don't sound so many people on the mic. They just sound so rehearsed. They're just not able to be themselves. Yeah. So to get somebody to be present and just relax and be themselves is one thing. The other thing is, as you say, the connective thread, the connective tissue, this is what I'm always looking for. Whatever the songs are in my set list, every one of them has to have a reason for being there, except even if it's just, I love this song. It's cool. It swings. That's fine, because the next one you might have a story about why it means something to you. Why, it, you know, when I do my Bennett show, it's built around songs that tell his story. I don't do an impression, by the way, it's an homage. But there's his songs and how they affected his career, but also where they fell in my life. When I was 15, I was on the Ted Mack Amateur Hour at CBS TV in New York at 15, singing, "For once in my life, I have someone who needs me." 15, yeah. Right? How silly is that? But there's always been a Bennett song like in my life somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so that show is stories about seeing him. What did I learn from him? What did I see him do? And now can we try it here? You know, but every song, you have to have a reason for doing it, and you have to bring them in with you.
Yeah.
Let them in. Let them see us goof it up or make a mistake, or, you know, don't worry about it. They love watching you mess up because they're in on the joke. And Marilyn builds in a screw up in every show. Yeah. I think it's always there somewhere because, I mean, I adore her. You know, I don't know how much time we have. I can talk about her for days, but yeah. I can tell you this great story about Marilyn. When I was a young singer, I watched her on The Tonight Show. And every 6 weeks or so, she'd turn up. She was on 76 times, more than any other singer.
Yeah.
Johnny loved her, right?
Loved her.
So I used to watch her, and I would see, who is this swinging, sexy white girl? Like, why does she sound so hip and, like, so cool? And I never saw her anywhere else. Like, she didn't have a career that a kid would follow. She wasn't on the other big shows a lot. She did Hollywood Palace or here. She wasn't – anyway, she wasn't in the movies. She her records were few and far between. She had a few. And then 12 years ago maybe, she's 88 now, 13 years ago, around her 85th, I was at Feinstein's in New York preparing to do my show there. So I went to see the room and just watch his show there. And she was in the audience, and he introduced her. And on the way out, I walked up to her and I said, "Wait a minute. Are you that Marilyn May?" And she cracked up. I said, I was blown away that here I had found her all these years later. And she had taken New York by storm because she had not worked in New York for many years. And then she did the cabaret convention at 85 years old and then sold out the Metropolitan Room from then on. And now you can't even get in to see her. And I fell in love. I took a lesson with her. And the next thing I know, she invites me to her 85th birthday party at Don't Tell Mama in New York. And I asked her assistant, is this just like a polite thing? Or does she really like want me to come? Oh, no, she wants you to come. I came there and she invited me to Palm Springs to her 85th West Coast party at Bob Mackey's house. Now I'm in like this rarefied air. What is that? And anyway, I went and ended up the next day chasing her after her at a sale. She used to go to these sales that I forget what they call them. They would set up in the parking lot, you know, big giant. And she would just run around shopping. She's a shopaholic. And I'm carrying bags now. I only met her a week before. Anyway, we became good friends, and she's been so supportive of me. And I think she's a force of nature that's not really inexplicable.
Yeah, she's absolutely wonderful. You know, it's interesting. Before you got on, your avatar had Tony Bennett, and you mentioned Sinatra. And I think about all of those voices that carried us through times of tumult and war and different things. You wouldn't even know what was going on because they swept you into this timeless world of feeling good. And in America right now, we're going through a lot of stress, a lot of things that are not okay. How much are you thinking about giving music and giving people a level of kind of comfort and social glue that they used to do when they were performing all the time?
I don't think about it consciously. I am extremely distressed at the world around me. I have five grandchildren who I worry about the world we're leaving them in. Without getting too heavy, certainly my work when I'm rehearsing, when I'm developing a show, when I'm coming up with an album, or when I'm out there pushing to try to get a gig or fill the seats, it diverts me from the daily pain of the news, and it helps me. So I can only think that it also helps the audience. And maybe if they're not too worried about the economy, they'll be apt to buy a ticket or two and come see. I'm doing a show. I'm doing the album actually with the full big band on June 21st here in Philly, and it's a small theater, about 265. And I'm just hoping, that people will be in a mood to get out. And it's first day of summer. It's a beautiful day on the river here in Philly. We'll be right down near the Delaware River, and I'm hoping they'll come out because music is a way to, as you say, so beautiful. I mean, music got a lot of people through those tough times.
Certainly
Maybe it'll
so.
help us now. Maybe it'll help us now.
We need it. So what is it that
No,
gets, what, no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you used the term feeling good. And that's on the new album, and we have a very different take on feeling good. Everybody thinks that's it drives me nuts because I'm a new Anthony Newley aficionado, right? And he wrote the song, right? And every kid that auditions for American Idol says, "Oh, I want to do a Michael Bublé song,
Oh,
feeling
no.
good." And I think, oh, I love Michael, but my God, it's not a Michael Bublé song.
Yeah.
It's a song that has lasted more than 60 years now in so many different. Nina Simone, and then Bublé's version of it, and so many, and it's lasted through every version of Willy Wonka. Or not
Yeah.
Willy Wonka, that's pure imagination. It's been used in commercials,
Yeah.
in so many ways. Our take on it is Miles Davis's "So What."
Yeah.
So the bass starts with ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-boo, ba-ba, and we swing it against that, and it's really cool. But anyway, it's one of those songs that I love because it's lasted. It just keeps on going.
Yeah, that's the beauty of the songbook. So let me ask you this. What gets you up every day? What continues to, I mean, you've been doing this forever. What continues to motivate you to love to get up in front of a crowd and record music and do this, what you do?
Man, there is still nothing I like more than walking out on a stage with people that came to hear this music and performing for them. If the musicians are right and the lighting and sound are, and the lighting's not as important as the sound, if they have good sound and a great band and some humans, you can't shut me up. And that's still, and sometimes, just singing them with nobody here. I mean, I don't play piano, so I depend on people to come and play for me, but I have enough, like even the album, I have a version of it without the voice, so I can just do the whole album for myself in the afternoon if I feel like singing. And I think it's really important because my gigs are not like, I'm not doing 2-week runs of every night, which I was, but I'm not. So I have to stay vocally, in tune, I have to keep my voice in shape. So I love singing. I set up a microphone here. I've got a little setup, and I play the tracks loud, and I sing my butt off. And just that will get me, really make me happy in a day. But boy, when there's people, and sometimes it's 15 or 20, I don't care. I did a couple of years at a supper club here in Jersey. Only because I could work with my guys, my trio, in a really cool room. And it was a lounge, which is not my thing, because, and people were, we'd get them for 15 minutes and they'd listen and clap and then they'd talk. But I had my band and good sound and I could sing anything I wanted. My pianist, Dean Schneider, and I've been working together for 35 years. He was Diane Carroll's guy for many, many years, 20 years. He's just brilliant. And we have such a history that we don't even write out a set list. What do you want to open with? We come up with that, and then we go up and do an hour and a half, and never, he just starts to play, and I know what he's doing. He wrote every arrangement I've done in the last 35 years. So it's that I just love it. And I think I'll always love it. I mean, until they have to wheel me up there. if I follow Marilyn's footsteps, they won't. I mean, I don't think I'll ever get to 98 and be doing this, but I think I'll break down before that. But she's the inspiration. She's the, you know, what
she's
we look forward to. But then when you get the chance to do it with an orchestra, that's the icing on the cake. To hear those harmonies and hear those rhythmic kicks and hear that, you know, like More Today Than Yesterday, the old Spiral Staircase song from the 60s. We do a swing version of that on the album. And when I went, I hadn't really heard the arrangement. And I get in the booth. I know the how it goes and what the form of it was, but I didn't know every lick or kick. And we got to a line where I happened to accent three words. And he wrote those accents into the chart, and we hit them exactly together without, and that alone, that carried me through 2 weeks. I was so happy to hear that, you know, like when you have those moments of connection. So I don't know, I'm gushing about it, but the fact is I still love it. I'm singing since I'm 11. I'm well past that now, and I still love it, you know.
So I got to know, you know, from 11 on, you know, when you have this dream of being in the world of performing in front of crowds, you dream about stages, all of these different fabled stages that exist. What was the first stage that you got on where you were like, wow, I can't believe this is happening? A dream place.
That's a great question. The first one. Man, I don't, you know, the Leon Russell song, A Song for You, right? I've acted out my life on stages. I guess there were so many. I remember the very first one, and it wasn't anything to write home about. It was a lounge here in Philly called the Capri Lounge with the trio live on stage, and it looked like a nightclub. This was 1965 or whatever. And it was a talent show on a Tuesday night, which was smart of them because the winner would come back on Saturday for $25 and sing on Saturday night. But on Tuesday, they would bring their grandmom and their aunts and their uncles and their cousins, and they packed the place on a Tuesday. And I was 11 and a half, and I was lying. I said I was 13. Imagine that you're going to lie that you're 13. And I sang More. Well, you know, More Than the Greatest Love of the World. Big standard at the time.
Yeah.
And there was a guy from the Daily News there, and he wrote, singer 13 has the poise of prose in the papers. And it was the biggest thrill. I just couldn't believe it. And I was 13. If I flash forward to, I mean, a lot of beautiful stages, a lot of wonderful nightclubs, a lot of cool places. The first really, I mean, it took a long time, but when I stepped on the stage at the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia, which is our performing arts, it's where the Philadelphia Orchestra plays. It's a concert hall and where the Philly Pops play. And the first time I walked on that stage with a 60-piece symphony behind me, it was just like the culmination. I just thought of, okay, everything I ever wanted is right here, right now. And yeah, it took a while to get it. I think probably before that, it was the Ed Sullivan Theater. Because that Ted Mack Amateur Hour, when I was 15, was taped at the Ed Sullivan Theater in New York. And that was the stage I'd watched Ella on, and the Beatles on, and the Supremes on, and the Temps on, and Tony Bennett at home every Sunday night. And now I'm standing on this stage. What? You know, and I sang there under the Geritol sign, you know, singing For Once in My Life with the Ray Block Orchestra. And it was like, that was pretty crazy. That was pretty exciting. And that was 15. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So after all these decades, I want to know this. Get to the true crosshairs of your soul. Everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, that you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
I'm a singer. You know, when I was leading the wedding band, I was the band leader. And that's a job that has so much complexity to it. People will never understand what a good wedding band leader at a $200,000 wedding is responsible for. Yeah. You have to know where everybody in that room is. Where's the mother of the bride? You're looking at the whole room from the outside in. So, and you're managing 11 other musicians to make sure that they're dressed right, that they know the songs for that wedding, that they're there on time, that the sound is right, that the caterer understands the schedule and they're not going to serve the prime rib while you have 200 people dancing. It's incredibly complex. And so I was the band leader then. Now, you know, it's good. I'm a good singer that I hope the musicians respect, because I love them so much. Without them, I'm, you know, absolutely nothing. But my main title that I'm most proud of, and that I live for every day, is that I'm a pop-pop. And I take that job really seriously. I have five of them. And the best thing about my life right now is that, as I said, I sing when I want. So I have plenty of time to roll around on the floor and take them to baseball games and have the catch. And, you know, I wasn't that for my kids as well, because I was doing 150 dates a year, and I would leave on Friday and come back Monday drained, and I'd never be with them on the weekends. And I was always in the tux running out the door. And so now I can make up for that a little bit, and I can be their babysitter. So I'm making amends with the kids. But yeah, I mean, I love that. And so I'm, yeah, I was a band leader, and now I think I'm just more of a singer. When I left the wedding business, this incredible weight of pressure came off my shoulder, because you can't get it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't have an off night. Oh, I'll get it. It's a lousy night. I'll get them Tuesday. You know, you can't. Those people need you to be perfect every time out. And I took it very seriously. And I feel that way about my shows now, but I also know that I'll give them what I got that night, you know, and it's not going to change anybody's life if I miss a note, or if I, you know, if I'm not that perfect that night. I'm sorry, I don't know why that's ringing. But anyway, so I guess that's the simplest way to answer you. I'm a singer.
Yeah, I love it. So for dreamers and their dreams, it's streaming everywhere. The big show is the first day of summer with the big band. Yes. And if anybody wants a physical copy, Bandcamp.
Bandcamp is where they can get a physical copy of it. Absolutely. And I'll have it to them immediately.
Okay.
And, you know, and of course it's streaming everywhere. It's on all the major platforms.
Yes, sir.
And I encourage people to go to my website, which will have a listing of everything that we're doing, coming up. I'll be singing the national anthem for the Phillies July 18th.
Right on.
Yeah, I love doing that. I get to do that at least about once a year.
Right on.
And that's a Phillies Mets game. So we got that rivalry going.
Ooh,
here.
Yeah.
And have some gigs upcoming, you know, in Philly and one in New York July 26th at the Cutting Room. We're doing the Bennett Show with a wonderful singer from New York, Sue Matsuki, who is going to partner up with me and be my Lady Gaga a few times. And, So all of the information to find out where we're going and get on our mailing list is at eddiebruce.com. Very simple. And if you go to YouTube, I think you'll have fun. I have those Friday night clubs, we call them. And I also have the digitized refurbished version of the Ted Mack Show from 1968 on there. They can see that. And I also have a clip of me on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which was kind of cool, where they even let me sing before they gave me a big check for $25,000. So that was fun.
That's cool.
Every singer needs a little boost now and then.
Uh-huh.
So it's a fun YouTube page. Has some cool stuff on it. And I love what you're doing, and you know, keeping the big band. Now you have a big band?
No, I'm just the guy that loves the music.
Oh, okay.
I have let music be a mystery, the one big mystery. I just observe it like a spaceship that came down to Earth. I love it.
But that's a great way to do it. That's your love. I mean, you know, it's just, I understand it, of course, totally. Because, you know, I don't play any instrument. You know, I can read, you know, functionally, but I don't play an instrument. So, I can't sit down at the piano. When Dean sits down at the piano and I hear what he does, I'm blown away. It makes me feel like it's just like, God, what do I do? Sing? You know, what's that? Listen, look at those hands. Like, what is he doing?
Yep.
You know, I have so much respect for that. And then to sit down and write an arrangement. That's why, like, somebody like Mel Torme, it's so mind-blowing. Uh-huh. He would write those arrangements, you know,
absolutely,
and then come out and sing like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. Yeah. Well, I love what you're doing. I can't wait to profile you on the show. It's so great to meet you. Thank you for taking a minute out. Good luck with all these gigs. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. Hopefully you come to Philly. I will get you the right cheesesteak.
I'm gonna call you first. Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Philadelphia, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Eddie for his time and cool. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.